Hello, military and aerospace enthusiasts. Welcome to our channel, Deep Dive Defense. Over here, we take a deep look from unusual angles, which may challenge your mind. So let's dive right in. As the fog of war from what Iran named Operation True Promise and the following Israeli counterattack have cleared, we can start to assess the true dimensions and impacts of this limited military exchange. Although the Israeli side and Western satellite image providers have not published useful satellite photos of the missile and drone impacts, we still have some indications of the strike's effects on Israel. Both sides have made official acknowledgments. Israel claims 9 missile impacts, while Iran reports launching 100 ballistic missiles, around 160 drones, and 30 cruise missiles. This information gives us a useful overview of the material and equipment used for the strikes. Iran has disclosed which missiles were employed via launch footage, and Israel has shared images of the empty missile booster stages that separated and crashed, providing insights into the missile systems used. This allows us to assess the attack's impact in more detail. Additionally, we can now evaluate the Israeli counterattack, which, though highly limited, conveyed a message to Iran about Israel's capabilities. We can compare both strikes and examine the multifold military strategic dimensions of these attacks. Israel's strike on the Iranian consulate in Syria was a bold and risky move, with Israel holding the initiative and escalation dominance at that stage. This move followed previous actions, such as the killing of Iranian military personnel in Syria, making the assassination of a Quds Force General Mohammad Reza Zahedi an incremental step in their deterrence strategy. Israel needed to maintain deterrence as Iran and its allied forces of the resistance axis pressured Israel on multiple fronts with small, but persistent and painful strikes. Iran had effectively managed to outsource strikes on Israel to its regional allies, with the Israeli war on Gaza serving as the pretext to do so. A very uncomfortable situation from the Israeli perspective, given that Iran could do that without the harms of being actively part of a hot conflict. The employed saturation strategy by the so-called resistance axis fractions meant that the Israeli defenses had to remain constantly active and on alert, putting wear and tear on hardware and personnel. Instead of responding directly inside Iran or acknowledging responsibility for sabotage operations on Iranian soil, Israel decided to hit the Iranian consulate in Damascus as the A major new escalation step. No responsibility was taken, but it was obvious that only Israeli jets launching standoff air-to-ground missiles could be responsible for the surprise attack on the consulate building. A proportional response from Iran could have been to attack an Israeli consulate in a third country without taking responsibility. Since Israel never took responsibility for their sabotage operations on Iranian soil, Iran's decision to strike directly on Israeli soil and taking responsibility represented a very significant escalation. It totally switched the escalation dominance to the Iranian side if an Israeli major response could be successfully deterred. Another crucial aspect was Iran's decision to warn the Western side, indirectly via America, about the impending attack, specifying when, where, and by whom it would occur. Typically, an inferior adversary avoids announcing an attack, preferring to exploit the element of surprise. However, Iran aimed to acquire the escalation dominance for its side and chose to announce its strike to assert its position. The subsequent Iranian declaration that it would respond 10 times more forcefully if Israel counterattacked and taking full responsibility reinforced this strategy. Importantly today, after several months and the Israeli counterstrike performed, we know that Iran's warning achieved its goal, deterring Israel from taking responsibility for the very limited counterattack. When making the decision to respond disproportionately by striking Israel directly, it was crucial to consider Israel's status as an unofficial nuclear power with one of the world's most advanced militaries. The strike had to be carefully designed to avoid causing mass casualties or massive damage. Consequences of a totally disproportional strike would have further isolated Iran diplomatically and defeat the purpose of a retaliatory strike of this kind. The aim was to deliver a disproportional response within the bounds of a revenge operation, avoiding severe international backlash. It also aimed to avoid, to force the opponent to take great risks in retaliation strikes, to save face, and restore regional deterrence. The primary objective of such Iran's strike would be to demonstrate capability, By executing this kind of operation, Iran aimed to show its potential to inflict significant damage if it decided to do so. Achieving this involves several goals. Firstly, the attack must be of a scale and simultaneous nature that pushes the opponent's defenses to its limits. Iran accomplished this by launching 100 ballistic missiles, and that simultaneously. Although Israeli missile defenses performed admirably, it was evident they were operating near their maximum capacity. This component of the strikes by ballistic missiles represents the exo-atmospheric space dimension of the operation. The aerial component, involving drones and cruise missiles, was designed to stretch the capacities of Israel's primary defensive asset, its air force. This component also tested the limits of the Allied forces supporting Israel. The strike's design and scale aimed to challenge the multiple layers of Israeli defenses, aiming to demonstrate that a further escalation could very well quickly overwhelm them and cause significant damage. The main question for the planners was whether Iran could push Israel's defenses to their limits without causing disproportionate damage. The planners decided not to target high-value objects directly, as the efficiency of Israeli defenses was uncertain. This was the first strike of its kind for both the world and for Iran, and the performance of Israeli missile defenses was unknown. A case in which the opponent lacked any missile defenses, and hence the magnitude of destruction caused could be well estimated, was Iran's strike on the US-operated Ayn al-Assad base in Iraq in 2020. Here, the targets selected, namely all hardware responsible for the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani by the Trump administration, were hit with remarkable high accuracy. The ballistic missile salvo against the Ayn al-Assad airbase also targeted runways and junctions, avoiding significant damage to the large, fragile, soft targets present elsewhere in the base, a capability display of Iran's ballistic missiles. Therefore, against Israel, targets were selected to avoid massive damage to high-value assets or causing mass casualties. With 100 ballistic missiles, 160 drones, and 30 cruise missiles launched, the target selection had to be limited. Iran chose to strike two air bases and a key radar site in the Golan Heights, military targets that were well defended and harder to hit than population centers like Tel Aviv. The focus was on Israel's air force, as their most critical asset next to their nuclear forces. One detail, evident from satellite photos, is interesting in this context. It shows a missile hit on a runway section at Nevatim Air Base in the Negev Desert. The strike near several C-130 transport aircraft, causing shrapnel damage to one of them, mirrored an earlier attack on an Iranian Boeing 747 transport aircraft in Damascus in 2020. This could be seen as a deliberate tit-for-tat response to that major escalation by Israel, which previously avoided any harm to Iranian aircraft delivering cargo to Syria. The released satellite photos of the missile strikes of the Iranian operation don't reveal much more. To avoid escalation, the satellite photos came late, not showing the direct aftermath and were partially obscured by clouds and of low quality. It's somewhat unclear if specific objects at the airbases were systematically targeted to demonstrate capability without causing excessive damage. The scale of the strike, involving a simultaneous or near-simultaneous launch of 100 missiles, showcased Iran's capabilities, which Western observers had previously questioned. Some US analysts estimated Iran's medium-range ballistic missile arsenal capable of reaching Israel at around 300 missiles. Thus, Iran demonstrated its ability to launch a significant number of missiles and suggested that it could increase this tenfold if Israel struck Iran territory directly. Iran's change in the rules of engagement hence meant that the death of 7 Islamic Revolutionary Guards Force officers justified launching 100 heavy ballistic missiles. The aerial component, with drones and cruise missiles, added another 190 targets that required interception by fighter jets or air defenses. The drones and cruise missiles forced Israeli airbases to stay active, maintaining operational readiness under the menacing threat of shock and awe ballistic missile impacts. Thus, we observe a synergistic effect of the space and aerial components of the attack. Interestingly, the aerial component would usually not be used against an advanced adversary like Israel, in a state of non-degraded capabilities and with prior warning. It is known that Israeli, American, Jordanian, British, and French forces participated in the interception attempts, representing a significant portion of the Western air power resources in the region. Considering the high operation costs of such fighter jets and their interceptor air-to-air weapons, there is a clear disparity between these costs and the low-cost Iranian Shahed 136 one-way attack drones and Pave cruise missiles deployed in the attack. The three times faster cruise missiles force the interceptors to react swiftly and fly quickly to prevent any cruise missiles or drones from breaching the defenses. While Israel employed unprecedented levels of satellite navigation jamming and spoofing in the whole region, this measure was not deemed sufficient. The chaotic situation of 190 air-breathing targets certainly did not allow widespread use of low-cost aircraft guns by the fighters, but rather forced use of weapons like AMRAAM and Sidewinder. The timing of the engagements of different aircraft intercepting various targets at different altitudes and sectors becomes critical. The uncertainty of whether all objects are intercepted necessitates rapid redeployment of aircraft to different locations. The Shahed 136 one-way attack drones cost between $10,000 and $20,000, while the intercepting missiles like the AIM-9 Sidewinder cost up to $500,000 or more, and an AMRAAM, $1 million. This cost-exchange ratio, reaching up to 50 times, underscored the dimension of economic efficiency of the Iranian strike. Few nations on Earth possess multiple options to strike a country with an advanced military like Israel's. Iran's options for a limited retaliation campaign can be categorized into four types: armed drones, one-way attack drones, cruise missiles, and ballistic missiles. Iran opted for the latter three. In summary, these were the initial conditions of the military exchange between Israel and Iran. In another video, we'll examine the weapons used and the operation's execution. So that's all for today. If you enjoyed this video and like our work, please consider liking, commenting, and subscribing. We will try our best to answer your comments. Your support would be greatly appreciated and motivates to produce more content in the future. Thank you, and have a great day.